following program is brought to you by your friends at Podcast One.
Hello and welcome back to Cruella Classics for Sunday, October 31st, 2021. We got some highlights of the Adam Carolla Show ready for you. My name's Chris Loxamana. I'm the executive producer of the Adam Carolla Show. And with me, as always, Carolla archivist, super fan Giovanni.
I'm here and I'm promising not to do any spooky ghost noises because it's played out and it's not thematic because we didn't pick any Halloween clips.
Yeah, this is just a regular clean episode and we're going to have a great time listening to it. We're here to laugh.
I want
to
make a ghost noise so bad, Chris.
We're here to laugh, Gio. Before we get going with these clips, I want to remind everybody, if you want to submit a clip request, you can email us classics@adamcarolla.com or find us on Instagram at Giovanni Giorgio or at ChrisLoxamano1. Let us know what you want to hear and we will find it for you and play it for the world. This first clip that we have, this is from 2013. We played a little bit of it yesterday. We're going to finish it off with Harley Morenstein, who is, you know him from Epic Mealtime.
Yeah, the YouTube channel that did all the crazy stuff that involved bacon,
yeah,
or like tater tots or
bacon.
It was on YouTube between like 2012 and 2014. Yeah, Harley was probably responsible.
These videos would go viral because they would just do these absurd meals where they'd wrap a whole turkey in bacon and then wrap that in cheese and wrap that in cheeseburgers and then bake it. It looked insane, but I mean, this is what we were into back in 2013.
It's too bad nobody like held John Madden down and made him react to their videos, because that'd be an ultimate YouTube channel. John Madden reacts to Epic Mealtime.
I would love that.
Because he's the turducken guy, so anytime you fold something on something else and it's made of meat, yeah, John Madden's got to say. It's Adam Carolla Show 993. It's part two, Harley's first appearance. It's a really fun back and forth between him and Adam, and they talk a lot about Epic Mealtime and like crazy food stuffs, and then Harley keeps trying to change around. Again, this is a very strangely formatted episode. There's a whole third segment with Damon John of Shark Tank and FUBU fame, which we'll play eventually down the road. Until then, check out Harley. Allison Rosen and Brian Bishop in studio as well.
I just want to talk a little about the Lance Armstrong thing, because I was doing a show with Dr. Drew today in this very same studio, and he was getting emails from Lance Armstrong as we were doing the show saying, these guys are up my ass, and what the hell's going on, and this is insane, and I'm being crucified, and blah, blah, blah. And then Drew got kind of weird and upset by it, because Drew's very
dreamy.
He's dreamy. He's hunky. He's also worried about the media or future. He hates, you know what Drew hates? He hates, I told
you. Not being
on TV? Not being on TV.
He doesn't do that very often.
Yeah. He hates not being on TV, and he hates people being mean to other people, which is weird because you'd think he'd be over it by now, but he's the kind of guy
who's sensitive.
If you walk through an airport with him and someone has a critique of him, he'll never tell him to fuck off.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell the person to fuck off all the time. He won't. He'll listen to anybody, no matter how horrible. And like I said, a lot of these schools we used to go to, they just let these fucking angry cunts come around the back and wait for us. And the schools aren't run correctly. They're like, hey, this so-and-so wants to talk to you. And then she'd just sit Drew down after we walked off stage and go, what gives you the right to give advice and what makes you think you're better? And after a certain point, I'd be like, hey, bitch, beat it. And Drew'd be like, oh.
Well, why ain't you got no play, player?
What, is it that he wants people to like him, or is he actually taking it in? Or like, why does he not have a stronger fuck you reflex?
I think he cares.
He's a big ball of empathy.
I think he took an oath not to tell people to fuck off.
Oh, the fuckocratic oath.
The fuckocratic oath. And I don't know, but he's just sensitive about things. And so he doesn't like all these mean Twitter wars and things going on. And, you know, Lance Armstrong being crucified in the media and things like that. And then I just said, First off, do we really give a shit about Lance Armstrong doping or not? Like when people go...
I don't.
No, fuck. Who gives a shit about people who ride a bicycle? Like, number one.
Yeah.
I don't even like people who ride bicycles.
No.
Number two, you know, this thing where it's like, well, he set the sport back. Oh, he got the sport on the map. No one gave a shit about the sport.
I didn't even know we're considering it a sport.
When we were in high school, did anyone give a fuck about the Tour de France? And
no.
I even hate the fact that I say France.
Yeah,
instead of France.
Right.
I get enough shit for calling it pajamas instead of pajamas?
Start calling it the French tour.
No, wait a minute, pajama? Yeah, the French tour.
Call it the French tour.
No, freedom tour. Well, you know how we took French fries and turned them into freedom fries? Mm-hmm. And I took French doors and turned them into freedom doors?
Freedom doors, that's right.
All right, let's call it the Tour to Freedom.
What are you doing this weekend? I'm going to hang some freedom doors.
That's right, and then watch the Tour to Freedom.
Mm-hmm. And but by the way, I've developed a workaround for pajamas, which is just PJs. Not because it's cute. It's because I don't want to be stuck in the jama thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's for you though. It's a little close to BJ, and that could have a bad effect on your man. You want your BJs, huh? Said PJs. Oh,
either way, yes.
Sleep my underpants. So he first off got the Tour de France on the map, which it was not, at least in the eyes of Americans.
Right.
Number one, number two, whatever doping he is doing, I'm sure everyone at the top of that game does some version of that.
Mm-hmm.
It may not be exact. He may be doing it better than others, but there's
he's still a better cyclist than anyone else.
Still works his ass off.
And not only that, the doping is sort of representative of the best we can do scientifically, you know, chemically and all that in the lab.
Mm-hmm.
How is that much different than Tommy John surgery, where you're taking a ligament out of one arm and putting it in the other, or taking a cadaver's blah, blah, blah. And you, like, it's all where science has gotten us,
right,
where technology has gotten us. Why is this one thing illegal and the others aren't?
Right.
Adrian
Peterson led the league in rushing this year, and Gale Sayers' career was over with the same injury. So why is it is it unfair to Gale Sayers and his legacy?
Hmm.
I said legacy.
You sure did.
Good one,
but
H-Man.
The crazy thing, though, is that we're all sitting here, much like any time there's a sex scandal in politics, we're sitting here and we're like, oh my God, I can't believe he did this, and now he's confessing, blah, blah, blah. And yet I think the point you're making, if this is where you're going, is right, that truly, I don't think anyone gives a fuck or is surprised.
No, number one. Number two, we're going to turn him into some sort of pariah, and we'll get caught up in this lying thing. And I blame you women for starting this, because you're the one who started this bullshit lie, pardon the pun, of, it's not that you cheated, it's that you deceived me.
Mm-hmm.
Really? So eating the strange pussy?
That's not what's the problem. It's that you didn't tell me.
Me going...
When I smelled strange pussy on you, you said that was just because you walked through a crowded room of people who had been eating pussy and it got on you.
So me being balls deep in your sister, not the issue?
No. I encourage that. It's that you couldn't be open with me about it.
So you would have been cool if I said, I can't fuck you tonight, I'm tired from fucking your sister?
Totally fine if you had just been straightforward with me.
Really?
I thought that you trusted me enough to tell me the truth about anything. We have no lies.
You know what?
All
right. I'm fucking your best friend then. Are we cool? I'm just being straight up. I know. It's
actually
a bullshit thing that women started. It's not what you did. It's that you lied about it. But you have to lie, because right now he's telling the truth and he's being crucified. So he's making millions of dollars. He wants to keep his yellow jersey and his weird little stuffed tiger, whatever the fuck that thing is they give you. I don't know what they give you. They give you a little stuffed animal when you get to, I guess they feel like it's cuddling time after all that time in the saddle.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
All those days on the road in the French countryside.
Yeah, you need a little warmth.
Yeah, need a little something to cuddle with. So there's a thing where they go, it's not that you doped, it's that you lied about it. Well, you have to lie. I mean, it's the same thing we did with Clinton. It's the same thing we do with everybody. It's somehow we decide whatever the initial problem was, that's not the problem anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's that you lied about it, although you have to lie. And by the way, that kind of lying is not lying. Like this, I'll explain to you what lying is. Lying is, I was an all-American football player at USC in the late 80s. That's lying. But when a cop says, have you been drinking tonight? And you go, just two beers.
And I say, Mr. Marinovich, really? Two beers?
That's good time.
Late 80s.
That is not, that's just lying to save your ass.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of lying that anyone would do.
Yeah.
That's Abe Lincoln.
Lawyers call that the truth.
Yeah, if he was riding a horse drunk and they asked him, Mr. Lincoln.
While putting something down on parchment, which you're not allowed to do.
Sir, I need you to do for me right now. Go ahead and get off that horse, okay, for me right now? Okay, Mr. Lincoln. Okay, Mr. Can I call you the Great Emancipator? Maybe just Medium Emancipator tonight.
Take off the stovepipe hat, please.
Going to need you to go ahead and take off the stovepipe hat and take that off, please. Okay, I'm going to need you to do Go ahead and for me right now, real quick. Go ahead and close your eyes and lean back for me, okay, right now? See, sir, that's why I said the hat should come off. I got that. Okay. So go ahead and close your eyes. Take your pinky and go ahead and see if you can – by the way, I don't think anyone can do that thing where you arch back, close your eyes, and touch your like forefinger to the tip of your nose.
No. That's the whole thing with sobriety tests is you can't even pass them when you're sober.
Right. All right. So the lie. Everyone's pissed off about the lie, but again, weren't we supposed to lie? And doesn't everyone lie? And is that really what we're pissed off about? And then the other part where people go, well, what am I supposed to tell my kids? By the way, first off, you don't have to tell your kids shit. They may not ask.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not like my kids are going to go, hey, what's up with Lance Armstrong and this whole Oprah thing? I'm devastated.
Right.
So if they don't ask, don't bring it up. That's number one.
That's wasting my time?
That's right. Number two, the guy pedaled a bike for a living, and he made a bunch of money, and he started a charity, and he tried to get a competitive edge.
He lost a testicle,
like many other athletes. And he raised over $470 million since 1997, so it says. So here's my whole thing. In life, there's just a scale in life. And are you part of the problem or are you part of the solution? Meaning, Lance Armstrong lied and he did some blood doping and he won some Tour de France's. He got to give his yellow jersey back and all that. Fine. Plenty of dads out there that have fucked seven different women, cranked out 16 kids, are living in Florida and aren't paying shit and currently beating the shit out of their old lady as we speak.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to focus on them as a society, not the guys who've raised $470 million for cancer research. And by the way, that should count for something.
Yeah.
You know, people do that. Okay. Yeah, sure. You raised $470 million, but you did lie. So be it.
It's a net gain.
Yeah, and God knows how much that fucking guy's paid in taxes. And everyone does this thing all the time where they go, oh, well, what do you keep talking about taxes for? I'll tell you why. That's the greatest charity of all. It's the greatest charity of fucking all.
I guess it is.
Laugh it up, because you have a charity, right? What is your charity?
Live Strong, or whatever it is. Ball Strong.
Right, there it is.
Ball
right?
Strong.
Guess who doesn't have cancer? The Ace Man.
Oh.
So I don't give a fuck about your charity.
Shit.
You see what I'm saying? And my wife's charity, schizophrenia. But guess who doesn't have schizophrenia? Me. So how's your charity helping me? What's your charity? So ovarian something, please.
It's ovarian something, please.
Thank you. You know what I'm talking about.
God willing, we can cure ovarian something, please.
There's breast cancer. There's ovarian cancer.
Endometriosis. That's mine.
And endometriosis.
Yes.
Okay. All right. The point is this. I don't suffer from any of those things. Sickle cell. Come on. I don't suffer.
Tay-Sachs, I think.
Okay. I don't suffer from any of these things. So your fundraiser, your 10K, your ride and walk and push and crawl-a-thon, not helping me any. But taxes, Lance Armstrong kicks in $50 million worth of taxes over the last 10 years or $20 million, whatever it is. I do use the roads. I do use the police force. I do like a nice standing army. I do like a nice bridge
that seems
to function pretty well. Taxes is the ultimate charity because it's like me giving and you giving and Lance giving to everyone's charity, which is your way of life.
Oh.
Your parks, your schools, your bridges, your army, your Air Force.
Yes, but he earned all his money in France, so he paid stupid France all those taxes.
France.
Freedom.
Yes, freedom. Okay. So the guy paid a shitload in taxes. He lost a nut, which I sort of argue.
Hasn't he paid enough?
That's what I'm sort of saying. Like I'm saying you've done enough, and then also this thing where people are disappointed because their kids and you used to be inspired. Like you inspired me. Well, how am I going to uninspire you? Do you know what I'm saying? Like if I inspired your kid, so Lance Armstrong won his last Tour de Freedom. He won, I don't know, 06, 07, whenever he came back, whenever it was. All right. So maybe you had a 10-year-old son at the time who was a huge Lance Armstrong fan and was wildly inspired. And that went on to make him a better soccer player or ride his bike or something like that. All right. So he didn't know he was doping. He was inspired by Lance Armstrong. What's Lance Armstrong going to do? Build a time machine and go back and uninspire him?
Right.
Too late. He was inspired. You can't unring the inspired bell. He was inspired, turned out to be a fucking cheat. So what?
His inspiration was inspired by lies.
That's right. 05, last win.
But really,
so
of all the things that you could find out about someone that would make you disheartened about them, this is definitely on the easier to tolerate scale than finding out that your beloved hero is a pedophile or something. Because that one, that's harder to bounce back from.
Well, this is, first and foremost, I assume everyone in the sport is doing a version of this.
Yes.
Number one. Or number two, or as much as they can possibly get away with. That's what I'm assuming. I'm assuming that everyone in the top 100 or maybe at least top 25 are doing everything they can possibly do. Secondly, this is just part of being a competitive son of a bitch. I mean, this is, look, I'll give you an example. Ferrari, we all know Ferrari. We all love Ferrari. We all worship Ferrari. Great brand, blah, blah, blah. We all don't masturbate to Ferrari like I do, but we all agree that the world's a little better because of Ferrari. Ferrari did a lot of racing. Ferrari cheated his ass off. He did everything he could do to beat the rules, to get just like what they do in NASCAR, just like in every sport where they go, I'm going to see if we can figure out a way to bend the rules, get around the rules. I mean, now it's much more regulated, but
To dip my toe in this, but like what kind of things did he do?
Oh, they would just have rules where it was like, I'll give you an example. There's something called homologation.
Know it well.
Homologation, I know, but for the people at home.
Yeah. What are you talking about?
Homologation is if you want to race a car and there's no street version of that car, then you must produce 100 examples as a street-going example. And then you go, hey, I got a street example of this car. Now I can take it racing. You see, you can't do – what I'm saying is you can't enter a race like a NASCAR and go, this is called the Chevy Go Fast. This is one of one. They'll go, well, that's a prototype. Mm-hmm. What we need is you need to race a Chevy Malibu or you need a Ford Taurus or whatever it is, and you need to create examples of them. So you want to go racing, make 100 street versions of the car, then you can take a few of them, modify them, and take them racing. Well, he wouldn't make 100 of them because he didn't have time to make 100 of them, and he didn't want to make 100 of them. He'd make 35 of them, grease someone's palms, and he'd go racing in a car. He'd do a whole bunch of shit like that. He'd do a bunch of stuff where it's like he had the series won, but if he lost the last race, he could have lost, so he'd have the race canceled or pull out or something, so he'd keep the series championship. He'd do a whole lot of, gamesmanship, cheating. I don't even know what you want to call it. That's sort of corked. What is a spitball in baseball? What is that, cheating? Do you respect the guy? If it's your team, it's kind of okay. If the guy's throwing a spitball, if it's the other team, it's not really okay.
Some people say if you're not cheating, you're not trying.
Absolutely. I mean, most of the guys that are at the top, and I don't mean cheating by poisoning the other driver or stabbing, going all fucking right. Jeff Galooly on everyone's ass, but doing everything you can and then some. And Lance Armstrong is obviously a guy who does everything he can and then some.
Well, but it's like you're allowed to do that thing where you go to a really high altitude and sleep in some sort of chamber.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, you don't even have to go to a high altitude. You just create that barometric chamber.
But you're allowed to do that.
It's more oxygen
in
your blood.
It's weird where they draw the line.
Yeah.
Well, so here's a question, though. Do you think he should be allowed to compete again?
I don't think he's ever going to compete again anyway. I don't think that was the plan. But the real question is, does he get to keep his jerseys? And I guess the answer is no. And then it's this kind of thing where it's like OJ with the Heisman. They take the Heisman back, but he still is the Heisman. Still won the Heisman that year.
Yeah, that's for. I think you're thinking more of Reggie Bush with the Heisman.
Oh, Reggie Bush.
But there's off field stuff and there's on field stuff, and it's all gray levels of cheating. But
still, in 2006 or 2007 or whenever it was.
2005.
Shit. 2005. Same year Lance Armstrong's pretty good year for sports. Yeah. Still, he won the Heisman. And
he took
a picture and it was in all the newspapers and they can take it back. But again, you can't really unring that bell. And so if you're Lance Armstrong, go ahead and say he didn't win it. He won seven of them.
And why is he? Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Yes, go ahead.
Now, this relationship that he has with Dr. Drew,
mm-hmm.
When did this start? And is this because of, you know, Drew deals with celebrities and drugs?
Mm. I don't know. I think Drew's a star fucker, number one.
You think?
I know Drew's a star fucker, number one.
Do not besmirch the name of my
I was looking for
boyfriend.
Clarity from Mr. Carolla.
Yeah. Look, I don't know how he knows all these people. Somehow, as soon as I left Jimmy Kimmel and Dr. Drew, they both started hanging around with super famous people all the time. I don't know how that – I don't know if they're waiting for
they
me to leave.
They realized like, they've been slumming it.
But would you think like Jimmy was like his phone would ring and it'd be like David Letterman and he was like, hold on. No, he's in the room. Yeah, I'll meet you at the Hamptons. No, we're on. All right, Raven. This is Snowman. I found.
Who are you talking to?
Huh? Nobody. Not David Letterman.
Under hushed tones.
Not David Letterman.
It's random we'd bring it
not
up.
Not David Letterman.
Suspected David Letterman.
Not David Letterman. Or Howard Stern.
I didn't
or
suspect
Jennifer
either
Aniston.
One. I thought maybe it was the
not those three.
Delivery for Thai food or something, but apparently it's
Letterman
not.
Would not deliver. I mean, yeah. Sure. Why not? Yeah. Okay.
Tell him I said hi.
The Thai food guy?
Give me some spring rolls.
I'll tell you my favorite yeah, and Dr. Drew I think did the same thing. I don't think those guys I think I was the only celebrity they knew the whole time we hung out. And then as soon as they start
that's
doing
what they made you think.
As soon as they start doing their own show, pow. Bunch of A-list celebrity folks. I think Jimmy's coming in here maybe Sunday. Gotta work that out. Yeah. Check an email or two.
We start calling him the triumphant Jimmy Kimmel now? He's trouncing everyone in the ratings.
God, the ratings, the Walk of Fame thing. It's all good times. I haven't told this one in a while, but I did order Thai food, and they gave me the wrong bag. Can I tell you this one?
No. I've never heard this one.
You've never heard this one?
I don't think I have.
All right.
But you didn't notice the difference because it's mostly all the same.
You're going to hear it. You're going to hear it now. This is under the heading of, if I'm really trying to get away with this, I must have a brain tumor. Sorry, Brian. Or I'm criminally insane. Like, you know those things where people mm-hmm. we talk about all the time where they accuse you of doing something
yeah.
and you go, what? What? And I even when you're sort of like fucking around with people and they believe you, then it means you're insane. Like, or they think you're insane.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like they go, did you take a, what'd you do? Did you drive to the party? And you go, no, I rode here on a yak. And they go, you rode here on a yak? If they believe you, that means you're an insane person, right? But evidently they just did.
Right.
So I order Thai food back when I was living in my old house. I go down the hill. I walk in. I say, I got to pick up. I got to, I'm picking, taking out. And she goes, oh, yeah, here you go. And she has this big bag stapled together at the top, you know, folded over the big grocery bag. And she slides it across to me and she charged me, you know, $34 or whatever. And I give her a little tip and I go back up the hill and I open it up and I'm starting to pull out stuff I didn't order. Your first thought is when you pull out stuff you didn't order, oh, this is good. Because they threw in some extra shit.
Yeah.
You think, oh, they got some extra shit. As you get to the bottom and realize none of the shit you ordered mm-hmm. is in there, then it quickly turns to frustration. And then I start getting angry at the person at what they ordered. Because this person ordered a cold beef salad.
You start to judge immediately.
It's like, what? What the fuck? Who would order? Why? Cold beef salad.
Yeah, we've talked about this. It's just
shitty.
It's just a chunk of fat.
Right. It's what happens the next day when you leave your beef and broccoli in the refrigerator.
Yeah, it's like you ordered leftovers.
Right. So I'm like, oh, fuck. God damn it. I walked in there. They handed me the wrong bag. And so I come back in. You know, I bring the bag back. I say, listen, you gave me the wrong bag. And she looks at the bag and it says John on it. And I said, yeah, you didn't. My name's not John. You handed me the wrong bag. And she said, you say your name was John. And I thought, first off, do I even need to dignify that the fucking answer? And then secondly, let's really just play this out. So here's my deal. I call up Thai food places and order shit I want. Then I come in under an assumed name, but I somehow figure out an order. I mean, John's a pretty safe one.
Yeah.
You don't want to go in there and say Engelbert, because that's
who knows what he orders.
Yeah. Well, no, what I'm saying is that's there's
and he probably didn't order that day.
It's a low percentage name. Yeah. It's very low percentage.
Could be under Bert. You want to check again?
Yeah. So, according to your logic, I order shit that I want, and then I give you my name, and then I come in 20 minutes, and I somehow, through telepathy, get you to hand me the wrong bag by using a name that somehow I'm
that's
aware.
That's why you're so rich. Somehow.
That's how I got where I am.
Yeah.
Somehow I'm aware that there's a bag back there with the name John on it, even though there's probably only 2 to 3 orders waiting at that particular time. I give you the false name. You give me the food I don't want. I get back in my car. I pay the valet guy. I drive back up to my house. I walk up the 1,000 stairs. I open it up. I realize it's not what I want. I pack it all back up again. And, oh, I pay you, by the way. This is quite a scam I got working here. I pay you more than what I fucking ordered. Then I drive back down the hill and present you with the bag that has not been opened or touched, at least the contents of which have not been opened or touched, and then ask that I get my order.
It's diabolical because it seems so innocent.
As I said, my name was John.
You need a better scam.
And maybe I had a brain fart. Maybe I just panicked. You know what I mean? You know how it is when you're picking up some...
Maybe you're bad with names, including your own.
Do your best Taiwanese accent. Who does a better Thai?
I'll do it.
Okay, you do it. And you see, what happens is, it's like those people as teenagers who give the false confession.
Mm-hmm.
They just panic. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Hi, I'm here to pick up my takeout food.
Oh, good day, mate. What's your name?
That's horrible.
Oh.
It's a horrible Thai accent.
I don't know why this is not yes and.
Okay, I'm just saying.
Can we go with it, please?
I want a Thai accent. Go ahead. Ready?
Did you order shrimp on the bar? Oh, fuck. I thought I had it.
All right, Allison, here I come. I'm here to pick up my Thai food.
You'll place our order?
Yeah.
What name?
There is no racial bigotry
Name?
I have been forced into
please.
It.
Oh, please, you're allowed to do it. You're allowed to do it. I made you do it. Sorry, go ahead. That was a good Thai accent.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Yeah, your name?
Shit. John?
One second, please.
See, it's not going to work that way. I'm just going to tell you my name.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm rarely going to panic and shout out someone else's name.
You shouldn't have said, oh, shit. That's a tell. That's what you call a tell.
And if I do panic and yell out someone's name, somewhere during the time when you're looking for the... First off, I'll be shocked if you go down under the counter and find something with the name I panicked and shouted out. But if, in fact, you do, at some point, I'll sober up and say, you know what? I freaked out. My name's really Adam.
Right.
Right.
It'll come to you.
It'll come to me. All right. Where the hell were we and where are we? Ah, how about a little love for a couple of our sponsors? First off, you can catch us live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. You can subscribe at youtube.com/VPN, and you can watch us in our glory. And if you want to check it out on youtube.com/Adam Carolla, all the episodes plus bonus content.
Oh,
I hope it's me walking to my fucking car, because I have no idea what this bonus...
Allison has promised she's going to wear less and less clothes each episode.
Oh, okay.
So by springtime, this should be a hoot.
If you've never seen me get into my car, it's worth a look.
Your taillights are something to behold.
It's worth a look. VPN is going to be live from Sundance this weekend with some awesome podcasts coming up. You can subscribe to catch those as well. And for tickets to see the podcast over at the Sundance, go to videopodcastnetwork.com. I have a limit of words that can be slammed together without fucking me up.
Yeah, clearly.
Catnip slows me down. Like, if you took cat and nip, I'd have to drag my finger and stop.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know if that's one word or two words.
I think it's one.
Mm-hmm. All right. Is it one? All right. The point is this.
It's one-ish.
When you take video podcast network and you turn it into one word, I have difficulty.
Well, it's like, see, I used to run a bunch of words together in hashtags on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And then Twitter got angry at me, the people on it. And evidently the way you're supposed to do it is you're supposed to capitalize each different word so that people can read it.
Aha. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
That's how you do it.
Like capital C and capital N for catnip.
Quick break to tell you about Tommy John. Fall is chaos in your pants. You're overheating 1 second and freezing the next. And to be ready for anything, you need underwear that can handle everything. And it's time for you to check out Tommy John Men's Underwear. When you start off your day wearing Tommy John, you're that much more comfortable, so you can do everything better. And that's why Tommy John doesn't have customers. With over 16 million pairs sold, you know what they have? They have fanatics, including one super fanatic, Giovanni.
I've changed my name to Johnny Tom.
Look, I don't blame you. I wish I would have gone that too, but you already marked it first. So
I beat you to it, yeah.
I'd have to be Johnny Tom 1. You know, I will do that. So this fall, upgrade what's underneath with new Tommy John underwear and feel the same level of comfort with the luxuriously soft loungewear. It looks good enough that you can wear them anywhere and feel good enough to wear to bed. And it's all backed by Tommy John's best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free guarantee. Check it out. It's Tommy John, right, Gio?
Get 20% off your first order right now at TommyJohn.com/classics. That's TommyJohn.com/classics for 20% off. TommyJohn.com/classics. See site for details.
I like Harley. That clip from 2013. That was a fun one.
Yeah, he's really fun. It's one of those funny things where, like, you know, all your favorite bands from the 90s would now come back on, like, ACS. They used to be, like, Loveline bands.
Yeah.
A lot of them, like, only the lead singer, like, Everclear. It's just Art now. Like, the other two guys are gone.
Right.
And it's kind of like Epic Mealtime. I think Harley even came on. I think it was this episode, maybe a later episode, where he explained that it's just now just Harley. It's a one-man band. It's
That's
like,
fine.
Yeah, I can't keep paying all these people. It's funny how that works out in, like, every booming, emerging medium.
Yeah. And Damon John's also going to be in that episode, which we'll play later. And hopefully Adam explains to him his invention of Fuber.
He focused a lot on Mangria and trying to get him to incorporate Mangria in various things. That's what that one was about. But yeah, I wish he would have talked about that as well.
All right, we'll get into that soon enough. But first, let's get going with our next clip. This is from 2010, and we're going to listen to Jay Duplass in studio. Director.
Continuation of 361 from yesterday in the regular ACS feed. Also in the Classics feed, of course. If you subscribe to both, we love you. This is Jay Duplass. So early in his career, Adam has to ask him how to pronounce his last name, which is quite interesting. This is him talking about the movie he was promoting at the time with Jonah Hill. It was called Cyrus. Very good interview. Just a fun segment. Jay's a great guest. Check it out.
We're bringing in our guest, who is a director. He's done a movie called Cyrus, which is getting... quite the rave reviews, by the way. Teresa's seen it. I have not. Going to try not to screw up his name. Jay Duplass. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Have a seat, Jay.
Hi, you guys.
Hi, Jay.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for coming in.
I enjoyed your movie.
You did?
Good to see you, Larry.
It's rare that people see the movie.
Yeah.
They interview me.
Marissa Tomei was excellent. As always.
I saw John C. Reilly at the Tonight Show, last Wednesday? I guess he did a Wednesday, right?
Did. Yeah.
Yeah, you must have watched.
Yes.
You must have watched that. Nice guy.
He's all right.
Nice guy.
He's all right, yeah.
You and your brother wrote the screenplay for the film, right?
Yes.
How do you go about that? I mean, first off, with your brother. Is it easier or more difficult?
Well, for us in general, making a good movie feels like an impossible thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so to have somebody that you know really well who might not be grumpy on a day that you're grumpy, kind of like leading the charge, helping you out.
Right.
It's just all easier. But, you know, not a lot of people get along with their siblings, I realize.
Yeah, I'd start yelling at mine like Mel. Whoops in after just a matter of moments, I'm sure. And then how do you get, like, I mean, how do you get a script like this to actors like Jonah Hill and John C. Reilly and Marissa Tomei and Catherine Keener, for that matter? I mean, not so much how do you get it, but I guess what I'm asking is, there's a lot of people that write a lot of good scripts.
Yeah.
And is it one of those things where this could be made without them, or do you need names attached to something like this to get it made?
We had made lots of little movies for like literally $10,000 and $15,000. We were kind of developing a way to make, you know, feature films really cheaply with our friends.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the first feature films that we made, called The Puffy Chair and Baghead, actually went to Sundance. And so people started to know about these movies.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually, we had gotten a hint from a friend that John and his wife had gotten a copy of one of our films, and they were watching it, and he was like semi-obsessed with like how small and weird and funny and real it was. So we kind of like were tapped in, and we were actually, I mean, even unbeknownst to us, when we were writing the script, like, there's no coincidence why the lead character's name is John. Like, we kept imagining him in it, and we got really obsessive about it, and like everything that was happening in the script, every time we imagined John, it got like funnier and weirder and also emotionally more interesting, because, you know, he's hilarious, but he's also just straight up a great actor. So,
and then once John comes on board, it's easier to get Jonah, Catherine, people like that.
Definitely. And I mean, I don't know. My brother and I have always worked with like available materials. I mean, you know, you have to when you make a movie for $10,000. But Jonah, like 3 years back, had said that The Puffy Chair, our first feature, was one of his, you know, favorite movies of all time.
Wow.
And that like quadrupled like our DVD sales. I mean, he's basically our unofficial agent slash manager by talking about.
So he does he does an interview. He mentions it, and it's sort of like Halle Berry going on Oprah and talking about some skin cream she uses.
Exactly.
Yeah, or Oprah talking about a book she read, and then it's Eat, Pray, Love.
Right. Right. Yeah. Seriously. And then it's a mega industry, and now it's a feature film with Julia Roberts.
So did you and your brother write that one too, or?
Yeah, we did.
All right. Yeah, see, that's why I'm a good interviewer.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Yeah, you followed that.
Follow-up question.
Yeah.
We did. That was a good tie-in.
Well, you know, it's interesting because Brian and I, a few years ago, went and saw The Foot Fist Way.
Yes.
Because Will Ferrell discovered...
Danny,
right. Yeah. McBride. Yeah, McBride, sort of because he had that... I guess it's Sundance, and it took one guy in a position of power, namely Will Ferrell, to embrace this guy.
Anoint him.
And bring him out here, and the next thing you know, he has quite a career going for himself.
Yeah.
And in a way, John C. with Jonah Hill kind of...
John C. and Jonah definitely did that for us. I mean, we were already kind of talking to studios about what films we might do, but there's a lot of, like... junior high type dating with a lot of heavy petting, but there's not a lot of sex going on when you first get to Hollywood.
And yeah, a lot of blue balls in this town.
Exactly.
A lot of beating off in the car.
But then you're anointed by a couple of mavens whose taste people really trust.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if John C. Reilly and Jonah Hill say, we'll be in a movie and the budget is, you know, excessive, then there's a pretty good chance that movie will get made and probably even get distribution. Although, if a movie sucks, you guys would be surprised how many movies that have people you've heard of in it that never got distribution just because I guess they blew that bad.
Yeah, when you see a movie with like five major stars and you've never heard of it or seen an image from it, I think you know what the result of that movie is.
Yeah, it's kind of like the one that doesn't get reviewed or who they don't let get reviewed.
Yeah,
exactly. It's when the guy refuses to take the lie detector test, is accused of killing his wife.
There's
exactly. a good idea who did it.
We're going to screen it the night before it opens.
Yeah. Just call a tell.
It's what you call a tell.
The scenes have the feeling of being improvised a lot of the time, and I don't know how much you let your actors improvise.
Yeah, I mean, we improvise every scene in our movie. I mean, we're kind of obsessed with documentary realism. I mean, I think we're huge fans of movies, but one of the things that we don't see a lot is, like, you know, you're watching something and you genuinely feel that it is real or that it looks real. And so we just encourage our actors to just come off of the script and to just have a moment in a room with each other. And, you know, they're really smart. They know what the scene's about. They know what their goals are and what they're trying to do.
So does the... And because I heard John C. Reilly interviewed on, like, KCRW or some station like that, and he was explaining that there was a lot of improvisation in the film. But then, is the script 9 pages long, or is the script filled with the words that you would like them to say, but sort of paraphrase?
That the script is just a normal, regular script that's 100 pages. And, you know, we sort of talk to them like, these are suggestions of what these characters would say. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but the thing is I think it's more about the way that we shoot. We don't really do setups where, like, people walk up to a mark, they turn to the right, they say hello, you cut it, and then people chunk it together. We actually light the whole room, and then they actually do a whole scene the whole way through every time they do it. And then we film it. I actually still shoot and film it like a documentary crew, basically, and just try and encourage them to just, you know, jump off a cliff and basically be free in the moment and let anything happen.
I've always found is whenever I try to perform, especially when the writer or the director gets too up in your head about the actual dialogue, because it always fucks you up, and it's a horrible way to direct a film or to really try to get anything good out of anyone performance-wise. Because certain people just have certain ways that they say things, and certain people will go, I'm leaving now, and other people will go, now I'm leaving. And that's just the way they say it. And it'll be in the script, I'm leaving now, and the person will go, now I'm leaving, and you'll hear, cut. Let's get one where you say, I'm leaving now, and the person will get up in their head about it, and then you'll hear them go, you know why? You know what? And then there'll be a weird pause where you can tell they're thinking about
it. That's awful.
Now I'm, oh no, I fucked up. And then somebody else, no, that was the right way that time. And it's just a horrible way to do it.
It's
and I've had
so
it happen
brutal.
A million times where people go, say I'm leaving now instead of now I'm leaving. And it's like, what the fuck is the difference? And why are you up in my head? And you're not getting anything good out of this. And by the way, it's only that way because some asshole wrote it that way in his apartment six months ago. It's not like it's better.
It's not better. I mean, we don't even direct the first take. Honestly, like, we have the opposite problem with our actors where they're like, you're giving us too much control over what we're doing, because a lot of times, you know, swimming in a sea of infinite possibility can be stressful, you know. But in general, if they're willing, we don't even direct them on the first take, because we find that probably a third of what's in the movie is a first take. It's that, like, lightning strikes, you actually capture it, a real thing actually happened, and, you know, I think that audiences can tell on some level that this wasn't planned, you know? I think there's, like, there's a palpable sense of anything can happen in this moment. That's why people watch America's Funniest Home Videos. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, you know what I mean?
It's the essence of comedy.
It is.
Stop me if you've heard this one before. And if you've heard it before, it's no good. And if it's like when you watch those, you know, when you watch those viral videos on, you know, Funny or Die or whatever, if you think the guy set up the rake, set up the camera, and then stepped on it so it hit him in the face, it's immediately ruined.
You would be so turned off in a half a second. But you know, and you know when it's real, when a guy in a mustache is climbing a ladder to clean off snow off of his roof, you just get, you're just so excited about when and how and what might happen.
It's so weird that even like if you watch a movie like where somebody's supposed to get hit in the head with a handball, like John Candy in the Mermaid Fish or whatever the mermaid movie was, Splash or whatever it was. You watch, it's hysterical, but you'll see John Candy lean into it or sort of lower his head into it or whatever. Just that little movement of, if you were watching this, you'd say it was cooked. Yeah. When it looks cooked. And also, wow, see, now you got me going on your movie. But it's interesting because I've always said, your first take is probably your purest. I've always told everyone, look, if you want to pick out a wallpaper, don't take the swatches, hang them up in the entry hall and stare at them for 6 months. You'll start swimming.
Yeah.
Have your friend hang them up. You turn your back, turn around, and make a decision right now. I want the third one. You'll never be more pure than that moment. Your mind will never be freer. So somewhere around the 18th take, your head is just swimming, and then you're not even acting anymore. You're just trying to spit the words out so you can go home.
Yeah, we've actually gotten this new technique that we used to do that when we had when we were doing independent films. We'd like have a location for a day, and you have it for a day, so we'd just kill people. You know, we just stay there until we got what we thought was right. And now what we do is, if we don't get it in like 2 or 3 hours, we just skip it, move on to something else, and then come back to it later. Because we're of that same philosophy where it's like, if it's not really happening naturally, you're going to bake it. And I mean, our movies in particular live and die on whether these moments feel real, because the plot is very, it's a very simplistic plot. You know, it's just the way that it's handled and the reality.
Something
that
made it feel especially real to me, this might seem odd, but the art direction, like Marissa Tomei's apartment just looked like where that woman would live.
Yeah.
And everything she wore was so specific to her.
Thank you. Well, yeah, I mean, we definitely like, we had this idea that like, you know, this is a woman who got pregnant in 1989, did not want to be with the dude, and just decided, I'm going to move out to Highland Park, L.A. Mm-hmm. I'm going to buy a Craftsman house for $60,000, and we're going to live out this weird artistic lifestyle together. And,
right, we're going to take pictures every morning.
Yeah, and we're going to make weird music and, you know, act like the rest of the world doesn't matter.
What did you shoot it on?
We shot it on the Red camera, which is a new high-end digital sort of, you know, we've always shot digital before, and it allows us to run really long takes. And I mean, before it was just a matter of cost, but I think recently we've come to realize that, like, there's sort of an immediacy with digital where mm-hmm. film is beautiful, and I think most films should be shot on film, but it definitely puts things off into a dreamy sort of, you know, distant land, whereas, like, our movies, again, live and die on you feeling like you're in the room with these people experiencing these uncomfortable relationship moments, you know, as they're really happening. And digital does that, I think.
And so I imagine now with the success of Cyrus, John C. Reilly told me while he was getting makeup applied in his dressing room, by the way, that's how you know you've applied. You've arrived, because if you're a C-lister like the Ace Man here,
you go
sit down in the chair.
Right.
I've noticed when I was in there, Tim Allen, John C. Reilly, who the hell else? Sandra Bullock, right before that whole thing blew up. They're all sitting in their dressing room with their makeup.
Yeah, they bring their own.
They bring their team in there. But when I was talking,
like going to a golf course and using their clubs.
Yeah, I guess so.
Can I borrow that?
Yeah, when I was asking about the movie, he said that the on-screen or per-screen average was really high, and that I think they were third nationally. This was a week and a half ago or so, and that, or maybe not. No, just a week ago. And then looking to expand, open up into more cities, more screens?
Yeah, I mean, that's like the goal. I mean, you know, it's a tiny movie, you know, released by Fox Searchlight, and they normally do, you know, two or 400 screens. But if people love the movie, and the word of mouth is traveling, it's just whether or not it gets out fast enough for us to, like,
stay
and then open, you know, in a bunch of movie theaters.
But either way, for you, you have crossed the bridge from beating off in the car.
Yes.
And the blue balls with all the glad handing and all the bullshit meetings and all this sounds awesome. Because
now I have studio execs that will beat me off.
A guy who will maybe even drop a digit on you.
Wow. It's more than just a free water.
It's possible.
It's not just because I've been bouncing around the city long enough, too. Their intentions aren't cruel. They would like to make a movie, too. It's just the idea is so would everyone else, and it just rarely happens. It's not that someone is saying, well, come on into my office so I can waste an hour of your life. They have a plan. It's just they're not going to see it through.
Yeah.
And then you're not going to get to see your plan through either. But now, when something like this gets under your belt, it just... This is what you need, just a little juice, a little heat, just something somebody recognizes, like, oh, I know that one. Sure, that's you.
Yeah, I think it's huge for us. I mean, you know, one of the things that we've been trying to get momentum with and that has been good and now I think is only going to be better is just actors in general. That's been our, like you started out with, our source of power has been that even, you know, really big actors have seen our tiny little movies and they're like, oh, I want to do that. I don't know what it is exactly that you're doing, but I can tell that it's not the way that we normally work. And,
right.
You know, that, I mean, you know, we've been fighting through this for so long. It's like, at this point, it's not about the money at all or anything. It's just about, like, surviving and then continuing to keep doing what we like to do.
And as far as what you like to do, the writing, the directing... What's is it? Is there one you like more than another? And if somebody said, and this could very well happen, then where somebody has a script and says, we want you to direct it now, Iron Man 3.
It's more about it's probably just writing and directing. It's doing our own stuff, and I think the reason why we're going to probably stick to our own stuff is because we destroy the scripts along the way. We improv a lot, and you know, although the structure stays the same, I mean, we really. We'll do anything to get a real and inspired moment in that moment. And, you know, when you have people like John and Jonah and Marissa and Catherine Keener on set, I mean, I think our job is what you said, is like just to like create an environment where they can be the best that they are. They're already goddamn great at what they do. Just don't fucking get in the way of what they're great at.
Yeah, I like that. Although I'm sure you guys would be completely different in 3 years.
You'd be fucking
screaming at everyone you work with.
I'm leaving now, and that's what you'll say.
Yes,
on the page, and
now
it's coming out of your mouth.
I'm leaving. This isn't old English, you asshole. God,
I look forward to those days. Can't wait to.
Now, do you guys know the Coen brothers? Another famous directing brother team?
No, we tried to be them in the early 90s, and we failed miserably because we realized they're the Coen brothers, and they're really fucking good at being the Coen brothers.
Yeah.
And nobody's going to touch that shit.
Yeah. Well, what do you like as far as some of your favorite films?
Coen brothers are
f***ing Eagles, man.
Yeah.
We're huge fans of the Coen brothers, actually, specifically, even though they're kind of the opposite of what we do. They have, you know, by the time they storyboard their movie, I think they're already 90% done in terms of the control that they are able to manifest. But, you know, that and just honestly, like, America's Funniest Home Videos and documentaries, anything that's that's real. I mean, you know, my wife hates me and so on me for, like, watching that crap. But, like, it just makes me laugh constantly. And anything, honestly, where I feel like I don't know what's going to happen the first 5 minutes that I sit down to watch it.
Now, have you seen Overnight, the documentary about the guy who
Troy Duffer?
Yes, Duffer. I saw Overnight several years ago.
Love that documentary.
Incredible. Yeah.
Yeah, I love all documentaries. And it's a Coen brother. Yeah, Fargo's great. And they did Raising Arizona, right?
Yes.
You know what I like that people don't talk about? I'm going to forget the name. With Billy Bob Thornton, and it was Scarlett Johansson's first big role. It's kind of black and white. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, I know which one you're talking about. Yeah.
The Man Who Knew Too Much?
The Man Who Knew Too Much.
That was a really good movie.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was a really interesting movie.
Yeah, I loved it.
Yeah, they're like.
And Richard Jenkins is in that, too.
He's great.
He's freaking amazing.
The thing about the Coen brothers is, at their worst, they're interesting.
Oh, like, absolutely.
The worst you can say about him is that was an interesting film.
And you'll be thinking about that shit next month.
Yes.
Right. Like, Blood Simple wasn't my favorite, but it's not like it doesn't haunt you.
Yeah.
Hey, T, you got the rest of the news,
I do.
By the way? Jay, you hang out with us.
Thanks,
and
man.
Comment on the news.
All right.
The rest of the news with Teresa Strasser.
Well, my movie. I got to get you my movie so I can get to one of your movies.
Yeah.
Have you enjoyed The Hammer yet?
No, he has not.
Not enjoyed The Hammer yet.
Well, he's seen it, but he just hasn't enjoyed it yet. Maybe the second viewing.
Okay, well, since you're here, maybe we'll have an opinion on another famous director, Roman Polanski. He is no longer under house arrest. The Swiss government yesterday rejected the United States' attempt to extradite him back to America in connection with his 1977 arrest for having sex with a 13-year-old girl.
The Swiss government.
Yes, Polanski was declared a free man, allowing the Oscar-winning director to return to his native France, as well as any other country that does not have an extradition treaty with the U.S. The ruling was considered a surprise, especially since Switzerland handles about 200 extradition requests a year, and about 5% are rejected.
That's a celebrity thing, right? It is.
Well, the Swiss government is saying that they asked for documents in connection with the case and that the United States would not release these documents. They're also saying he was a friend to Switzerland. He'd spent a lot of time there.
He gave them a lot of documents, too, with Benjamins on the cover.
Yeah, I'm sure. Okay, like, I know, please tell me if this sounds out of line in any way, shape, or form. I'm going to try not to sound like an ugly American here. We have laws, and then he's living in our country, right?
Yeah.
And then he rapes somebody, essentially, and breaks our laws.
Right.
And then we are going to prosecute him for raping this 14-year-old, I think, 13-year-old girl, because we have laws here. And he finds out that he's got a hanging judge, and he says, I'm going to France, and I'm going to escape your rules, your laws. How about the part where we just take a couple of guys with windbreakers and their cuffs on the belt and crew cuts and put them on a Pan Am flight and say, excuse me, we're going to France and we're going to go collect our fugitive and we're going to bring him back and we're going to prosecute him according to our laws. In France, if you have an issue with that, first off, we'll fucking bomb a hole in you so fucking big you'll never be able to get out of it. But secondly, fuck off and then fuck off again. Are you fucking nuts? Let's just go get him and bring him back.
He's directing movies. You know where he's going to be for 2 months at a time.
Why wasn't this done in 1976?
Here's what happened. He pleaded guilty to unlawful sexual intercourse at the time, claimed he feared that another judge might put him in jail for 50 years in violation of a plea bargain. Initially, the justice authorities had apparently agreed to drop other charges, including rape and sodomy, in exchange for a 90-day psychiatric evaluation, from which Polanski was released early. So, on the eve of his sentencing, he went to Europe. Now, he's a French and Polish citizen, I think. I think yes. He's dual, or I guess that'd be three.
But at least how about Polish. We just... I mean, listen, everyone who calls this country a bully can blow me, because if we were really a bully... And especially what we did for France in World War II. And by the way, this is not so long after World War II. I mean, you know, it's 25 years after World War II. At the
Tell me about that, Grandpa more, Corolla.
Maybe a little more, but not so much. Everyone whose ass we saved in World War II is still fucking alive. And I'll bet you half those ass wipes are in positions of power by 1974 or whenever the fuck this takes place. How about we just fucking go over there and get him? And if they have a beef with it... We'll destroy them. I don't think they have a beef with it. They have a long track record of not having a beef with aggressive actions. How about we just go get him? Does that make us bad? He's a fucking rapist.
What's confusing is what kind of confidential documents we wouldn't give the Swiss to extradite him. I mean, what could we possibly be hiding?
But as far as the Swiss go or any of those asswipes go, like, hey, we're coming to get our fugitive, and we will bring him back safely and try him fairly.
Well, let's
That's
take a look at the Swiss. What, 500 years of peace and prosperity, and the best thing they've given the world is a chocolate and good clocks.
Yeah.
They had all those numbered bank accounts where the Nazis were able to hide all their stolen.
That's because when you're happy, you don't get anything done. When you're happy, you're just dead.
Yeah,
to the
right.
You're just happy. You just kind of like eat cheese, have sex, and you know
they contribute nothing.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Then
Julia Roberts movie. Eat cheese, have sex.
Oprah loves it.
Yeah. Whether it's the guy who kills the federal agent, then flees to Mexico, and they won't give it back because we have a death penalty, or whether it's the director that hits the 13-year-old in the back door of Jack's mansion. Either way, shouldn't we just go over there and get him and go, hey, fuck off?
Did you guys see the Polanski doc? There's a doc that came out. I don't know if this affected you guys the way I did, where the doc is primarily about this case. But then, you know, two-thirds through the doc, they start talking about what we all know is that his wife was murdered with his baby inside of her by the Manson family.
Right.
And at that point in time, I literally lost all focus on the case and the trial at hand. I was like, this guy's wife and kid got murdered by Manson personally.
Yeah.
It's insane.
You shift your allegiance because you start to think, well, not only was this guy coming from war-torn Europe.
Yeah, he fled concentration camp.
Right. But then his wife and child were brutally murdered.
Yeah.
And he was obviously off.
Yeah, the scale of this guy's life is a little different from mine, whereas, like, if they don't have... Like my Jolly Ranchers at 7-Eleven, I come home upset.
Right. Yeah. Right. If you have to get sour apple and not cherry.
Yeah, it's just not gonna.
She definitely paid his debt to society.
She definitely paid.
Yeah. And listen, cosmically I'm square with him. But I'm just saying I don't think
that's an interesting question. I mean, are we? Because raping a 13-year-old is pretty grisly.
Well, doesn't she want this to be over? Doesn't she want to call
well,
it
did
quits?
Well, do you remember the interview with her and her mom from that documentary?
Yeah.
It's
very strange because the mother dropped her off.
I just remember the interstitials with Tom Bergeron. That's all I remember.
Oh, yeah.
Always livening things up.
Yeah, absolutely made it
Some
better.
Of that was canned laughter, by the way, when he's talking
about
the
rape. Yeah, they sweetened
it. It's
possible. Definitely sweetened and posed. Either way, I just don't understand... Why bother being the most fucking powerful nation on the planet if you're not allowed to go get your fugitives and bring them back to your powerful nation and then prosecute them? I don't understand why he was able to do that in the first place, and who knew it was that easy?
I know. I thought they just took your passport, but I guess if you're a French and a Polish citizen, they don't have the right to...
Once again, proving, by the way, that the world hates us, and once again proving that even when you help people out, they hate you even more. France has had a fucking... France hated us. Their hatred for us was at about 3.5 before we bailed their fucking ass out of their culture being completely usurped by Nazis and destroyed. But when we did bail them out, then we shamed them. Now they really hate us, and that's why they claim to love Jerry Lewis.
Oh, just...
Think about this. I don't think the Germans like Hasselhoff, and I don't think France likes Jerry Lewis. I think they sit around and think, what would piss us off the most?
They're trying to champion the most embarrassing elements of our society.
Yeah.
Raise them up to the world.
What would fuck with Uncle Sam the most? And this would be it. Oh, no, we love Hasselhoff's music. He is an awesome recording artist. Yeah.
Well, Roman Polanski.
Yeah.
Hasselhoff. You're familiar with his work. Rowan Polanski is free, but Lindsay Lohan will apparently be going to jail, and she's very scared, not because of the other inmates, but because she can't stand being alone, and she thinks jail will push her over the edge. Sources close to Lindsay tell TMZ Lindsay is climbing the walls because of the prospect of jail. She can't be confined to small spaces. She can't be alone. It's so bad that when Lindsay flew back from France in May, she asked a friend to fly from L.A. to Paris just so she would have someone to fly home with her.
Yeah, someone's got to mule those drugs.
No, there's that.
I think she doesn't want to be... Well, the good thing is you can go nuts in jail and nothing really happens, you know? I mean, it's a good place to go nuts. As opposed to behind the wheel of a Winnebago.
Right.
You know what I mean? Going over, like, a suspension bridge. But she probably... is one of these people that needs a lot of substances in her, and not being able to have those substances is kind of freaky.
Yeah, I know she's allowed by the court to take a certain amount of medication that she's been prescribed. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if she continues to get that. And then I started thinking, well, she probably gets psychiatrist visits while she's in there for medical reasons, and I don't want my tax dollars treating Lindsay Lohan's addiction.
Yeah.
I really don't. Let her pay for that.
Yeah, okay.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Why is that our problem? Yeah. I'm sorry you got in trouble with 5-0. Sorry you don't know how to hire a driver that you can afford instead of driving drunk. Why is that my problem?
But then she'll probably then get some community service, and she'll be doing some PSAs or picking up trash. Like, what will she be doing?
Yeah, what job does she get?
I don't think it'll...
Well, playing Linda Lovelace in the biopic, for
ooh,
one.
Yeah. There's washing cop cars. There's picking up garbage. And then there's the PSA one.
Right.
She's definitely getting the cop cars. So yeah. No doubt about it.
Yeah. Right. Well, she'll probably be kept away from Gen Pop and have her own cell.
Mm-hmm.
She's afraid she'll be lonely. I think she's going to end up at Linwood, where Paris Hilton went.
Mm-hmm. Gen Pop sounds
Gen Pop,
like
Linwood.
A...
Linwood. Two great porn stars.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a category on iTunes, too.
GLAAD is not happy with The View.
What?
The Gay and Lesbian Alliance?
Sherry Shepherd.
Yes.
Must have said something.
Yes.
What a shocker.
She did. The gay
She's
rights
normally
group.
Normally so hysterical.
Yes. She's they're upset over the show's June 22nd episode in which host Sherry Shepherd and guest host D.L. Hughley.
Hughley.
I don't know how to say his name. Hughley?
Hughley.
But it's Hugh Grant.
You got gaslit by August.
Oh, yeah. August did that.
Mike August, who books the show, swore it used to be like Hugely. And then it went to Hughley and then Hughley. But it's D.L. Hughley.
D.L. Hughley was discussing increasing HIV rates amongst straight African American women with Sherry Shepherd. He blamed
Hold
the
on,
increase.
That sounds hysterical. Keep going.
I know. Laplace? Rimshot?
Yeah, that's good stuff.
He blamed the increase on black men who are secretly gay. Variety, there was an ad in Variety taken out by GLAAD, and the ad comes down on the show for perpetuating what the Centers for Disease Control has publicly disproven as a myth. That's a quote from the ad. The ad says that despite several requests to have The View provide the correct information to viewers, nothing has been done. GLAAD is demanding an on-air apology.
They're a very angry group for a group whose acronym is GLAAD. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
They're,
you
glad.
Think they'd be a jovial bunch with that that name, but not so much. Yeah. So DL is saying that a lot of the brothers are sort of quietly stepping out,
on the
which
down.
I have heard on the DL, which I have heard quite a bit, culturally not great for them, and also sort of a career buster, too. And it just, you do wonder about, like, you take like Eddie Murphy. Like, what
I don't like white people.
What the hell's he doing? What's that about? You know, we how does that work?
You people, you know what are
I
mean? Rednecks.
Like, okay, I'm going to pick up a transvestite at 4 a.m.
But I'm straight. I've always been straight.
And there's always been a little Magic Johnson. Where the hell exactly he grabbed those AIDS? Was he banging away with James Worthy in the straight suite, or was he somewhere else? I'm always a little curious about how that works. I know it's a sort of death sentence in that community to be gay.
Well, double if you're an athlete. But, yeah, not great
right.
if you're
oh,
African-American.
Yeah. Athlete, yeah, whatever color you are, but especially an athlete. But what do you think of that? Do you think that's totally false? I mean, I know glad or happy or whoopee has their own statistics, but you can kind of cook those up any way you want to cook those up.
Well, I guess the question is, why are more straight black women getting HIV?
You know,
And Whoopi has all the answers,
yeah,
obviously.
Yeah, she does. Yeah. And so where's that coming from?
I have no idea. Perhaps it's drug use. I mean, there's any number of things, but GLAAD is saying that according to the CDC, it has nothing to do with this black men being secretly gay thing.
Well, it wouldn't help if black guys were stepping out and
is
having...
Is it because they're upset that black men are... That they claim that black men are secretly gay or that black men... Who are gay are spreading AIDS, HIV.
GLAAD has an agenda, which is AIDS is an equal opportunity killer. So there's not all roads lead to the guy's asshole.
Right.
You could get it anywhere. And they've been spreading their own propaganda about, oh, you can get AIDS anywhere, and you can get AIDS, any heterosexual couple can get it. And it's like... while technically true, everyone just close your eyes and picture all the straight couples and all the straight people you've known who have gotten AIDS versus gay. Right. And it doesn't take a fucking clinical scientist to figure out that more gay people than straight people get it. But they are constantly doing battle against that and probably wasting everyone's time. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Go ahead.
A high school teacher in England has gotten in some trouble. Benedict Garrett is a sex education teacher. He was outed as a porn star after a student found a website promoting his services. Garrett, who goes by the porn name Johnny Anglaise, moonlights as both a stripper and a porn star, appearing in films such as European Honeys 4.
Oh, his first name is Benedict?
Yeah, Benedict
Garrett.
And he needed
to get a porn name?
Wow.
What? You're right.
All you gotta do is take your name and just... hyphenate it, like Benny Dick.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
Well, instead, he's Johnny Anglaise. Maybe he didn't want people to know his name, but they found him anyway.
Uh-huh.
Now, speaking of safe sex, as a sex ed teacher, obviously, he promotes safe sex. But in his work, he does not always use protection when performing for the camera. He's now been suspended by school chiefs, but he's not apologizing for his actions, saying, "I'm not ashamed of what I've done. There are many more immoral ways to earn money than romping in front of the camera."
Who's he romping with or on? Do they say?
Yeah, what's his genre?
Sherry Shepherd wants to know whether
if he's on the down low.
Yeah,
it's unclear, but we could look up European Honeys with a Z4 and see
what sort
of porn.
Okay. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to know about what's going on with the non-use of condoms in porn. Like, do people not? Are they, what's the situation
it's really interesting.
In the community there?
I'll tell you what's
How
happening.
How do they do it?
I think it's the DNA AIDS testing, the immediate DNA AIDS testing or whatever they're doing now, which is when AIDS came out, then they didn't use condoms, and then everyone freaked out, and then they started using condoms. I'm such a pig that I didn't like the condoms in porn. Like, it really...
Yeah. That, well, I don't like them either. That, I mean, I'm
but just,
you know.
How spoiled do you have to be where it's like, oh, this is really ruining watching strangers fuck? I'll beat off, but it'll be, I'll not be a good begrudging, it'll be begrudging
right.
beat off, by the way.
It won't feel as good.
Yeah, it's like playing a game under protest. Let it be known.
I'll grimace even more than usual.
Yeah, I will not be happy about this.
I would like
next
to register
offering.
My disapproval
yeah.
before I start this jack session.
Right. So then they started wearing condoms, and for some reason the condoms wouldn't go on until the intercourse happened.
I've never seen a condom porn.
They'd get, you should pray you and your child never have to endure this anguish. They'd get the blowjob. And then the condom would be donned at some point, and the guys that were really good could sort of whip the thing off. sort of, was it Jim Abbott? Who was the guy? Who was the pitcher only had one arm?
Jim Abbott, the one-handed
Jim Abbott. They'd handle the condom like he would handle his mitt. He'd, right. he'd keep it on his stub. He'd throw his pitch and immediately go on to his other hand. Like
so smoothly.
You wouldn't even know it. There's been a couple of baseball players that didn't have, like, there was an outfielder, like, from the 60s or something, did not have an arm
or use
of an arm. And the same way they could make that quick pop, 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 that's the way these guys will do it. I'd see a guy even use his foot once. Just whoosh, pow, heel, pow, right up. There's probably a condom wrangler just out of frame as he grabs it. Got it, boss.
He's got, like, a catcher's mitt back there.
Right. And so then they pop the condom off. Now, I don't exactly know. I'm no doctor, but again, getting the blowjob with the condom off, then putting the condom on and screwing, and then popping it off and dropping the load in her face seems to me like, again, I'm not a doctor, but it still seems like there's a way that the disease could be transmitted.
Yeah, sure. There's the oral. There could be a sore in your mouth.
Barely and if you're sex.
A porn, that yeah. is, yeah. Barely I don't. Safe. I think if you asked Benedict Garrett in his sex ed class if those were safe practices, he would have to tell you no.
It's got
to
be bad times for the chick who's like, oh, thank God this guy's wearing a condom. 10 seconds later, my eye! Oh, God damn it! What the fuck? You're wearing a condom! Where is it?
I was wearing a condom.
You can't shoot it across the room like a gym sock and then drop a load in my cornea? What the fuck? You're wearing a condom. All I was told is that you would be wearing a condom. I know the part where you threw it off, right at the part where I want you to keep it on, by the way, and then put jizz up my nose. This is horrible.
You don't remember years ago on Loveline when you came up with the condom loader?
Oh, yeah.
They give the over-the-crotch automatic condom loader.
That's brilliant.
What this would have been used for. This would have been used for a condom.
Well, the guys, a lot of guys didn't want to use the condom because of the interruption of
breaks,
momentum.
You got to keep it near the nightstand. And
you don't want her to sober up. Or
Roofie's
wearing off.
Plus, it's
or the
like
duct tape's coming
ticking.
Loose.
Yeah.
It's like you're a thief. It's like this clandestine activity you're doing over here in the corner.
Right. Yeah, Teresa, I don't know if you know this, but when we try to fuck you, we act like you don't know we're fucking you. Sort of like you're fucking like, I got to fucking do this. Oh, my God. Yeah.
In this 12 seconds that I reach for the condom, she's going to realize what's happening and
that's
change
right.
her mind.
Right. That's right.
It is true that if there's like this interruption in the action, you're scared the skipper's going to come running out from the bullpen with the windbreaker and just go, sorry, you're coming. You're coming back to the dugout, you know.
Bring in Charlie Sheen.
Right. So he's going for Sheen.
Bring in the lefty.
As a closer.
That's right.
So, yeah, there's a, So, the condoms, but now I think they have this sort of immediate DNA test. So it used to be they take like a blood sample and it took 2 weeks or a month to find out whether you had AIDS. Now they can find out almost immediately if you have AIDS. That and the big mound of coke everyone's doing seems to have made it okay.
Well, I think there's a flaw. From what I understand, there's voluntary or the industry has created this voluntary mandated testing, but it's not from the government. It's from the industry. Maybe I'm wrong. But I feel like I've seen a documentary where there's one clinic that they all go to for their monthly test. Mm-hmm. The problem is, I think, even with that immediate DNA swab, I think there might be a period of time where even if you've been infected, somehow the virus doesn't show up in your blood.
Yeah, that's what I was always told. That's what they always tell you to scare the crap out
of
you.
Well, I don't...
This could show up 10 years later.
I saw that.
Have a good day.
I saw that doc... too,
you
and
know
I don't
what I'm talking
know.
About? They all go to that same.
I don't know if Bergeron was just reading cue cards or speaking from the heart when he said that this was pretty much foolproof and that it was safe.
And yet, occasionally, one porn star gets it, and then a few others are infected. It has happened.
Porn stars getting AIDS is sort of like when somebody's killing streetwalkers. We're not happy about it, but we're not as upset as when the blonde-haired kid from Florida gets it from the transfusion of blood. You know what I mean?
Two words: assumed risk.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah,
it's the guy buying it on the motorcycle. Like it's sort of like, well, I guess he shouldn't have been on that bike. Like it's sort of, I don't have a motorcycle, so I'm cool with it.
Well, I'll leave you with this: another story from the world of film. Comic writer Harvey Pekar, whose life was portrayed on the big screen by Paul Giamatti in the film American Splendor, died in his home early Monday. He was 70 years old, according to Cleveland police. Officers were called to Pekar's home by his wife at about 1 a.m. His body was found between a bed and a dresser. Cause of death not known, but he had been suffering from prostate cancer, asthma, high blood pressure, and depression.
Wow.
Yeah, did you see the movie?
I love that film, and Hilarious movie. Amazing guy.
Was that the one that was sort of half animated?
Yes, or? That was the film. Half animated and half real life. And
broke
they used
the fourth wall.
They used PR in the film itself.
Yeah. Boy, found between a dresser and a...
And a bed. Yeah, cause of death not yet known, but I guess he was not well. And Paul Giamatti was great playing him. Because some of the real characters were also in the movie, like the nerd guy.
Yeah.
Who was maybe another artist.
I consider myself a nerd.
That guy was almost exactly like the guy he was playing.
Wow. Well said.
Yeah, may rest in peace. I'm Teresa Strasser, and that is the news.
The news. With Teresa Strasser, eat a dick, MSNBC.
And Jay, maybe Paul will be one of the interesting, talented actors lining up to do your next project.
I'm obsessed with him, so.
Yeah, are you?
He knows it.
He's really good. And again, I made my movie telling everyone I'm only making this so I can make the next one, although I never got a chance to make that next movie. But Cyrus, while it's going to be a hit on its own, I think it's going to serve as a nice launching pad for you and your brother Mark
to continue to
go onward and upward. And no more walks out to the Chevette with the blue balls anymore. No. Jay Duplass, our guest, the name of the movie, Cyrus.
And that was Jay Duplass back in 2010.
Such a crazy flashback. It's so weird that you've been at the show this long. You've worked in all these different episodes and different, like, the formats of the show, even in the same, like, ACS radio format. Like, having a news, then guest, and Larry Miller in the middle, or guest, then news. And it's funny that I have to keep track of it all for you.
Yeah, thank you. It kind of blows my mind and hurts my brain thinking about all the different variations of how we've done
it's
the
over 3,000 episodes. How can you remember that? You can't even remember 100 people, like in real life. You can't have more than 100 people in your circle. You start forgetting faces and names.
Yeah, and I'm pretty much there.
But, maxed out human brain capacity. I need a hard drive upgrade like Johnny Mnemonic.
Yeah, but if anything though, I'm just grateful I was there. It's so cool. All right, that'll do it for part one of today's episode. Stick around, part two coming up right now.